Yo, it's a Saturday, I'm home, 6:30 chilling, surfing the internet to see what I'm feeling, laying on Blog Talk, see what they feeling, came across the barbershop, stepped into the building, real life sports talk, real entertainment, might not really keep his ear into the pavement, finger on the pulse of the industry, save it, you don't like the way brag, you ain't gotta say shh. Listen anyway, every Thursday, him and Corey G, tell him what you tripping on any day. Barbershop mixed with talk show, there we go. Give you the best damn show on the radio. $1 million audience meets with your favorite host. $1 million connection, feel the force. Most electric, most eclectic. Listen to the shows where the pros expected. 2 shows a week with an A-class guest list. The best damn show on the radio. Check
this. The best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show in radio.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Once again, Sports Authority and other stuff. We are here to do what we do. I guess I would say every Tuesday, but it's often on Tuesdays. And this weekend, we're going to get into a little Olympic talk. We got a little NBA, a little Olympic, talk about the NBA players a little bit. And then we're going to do a little discussion about the a little fantasy football talk. We're going to see how all that plays out. All right, cool. I was about to say, man, I think I have Paris on, but I couldn't. I heard the Olympic background. What is going on, man? How you doing this evening?
Hey, that is a classic Chicago Bulls basketball game.
Which one?
1990 Chicago versus Cleveland. Jordan scored 69 points. You know, it's confusing. When I watch these hardwood classic games that stick out to me. First of all, the TV reception was not that bad back in the day. Now, we've come a long way, but you watch some of these shows and it's grainy. I do not remember TV being this bad when I watch these games live.
I have two responses to that. One is I went to the wrong channel and it went to the Bears and Broncos game. I was looking for the hardwood classic game and I got the Bears Broncos. Two, I said the same thing. I think what it really has to do with Bears is that these new TVs, they aren't built. That means they aren't made to, you know, for that reception. Cause like you said, those games weren't that bad back in the day.
They weren't that great. Bad. No,
but then again, at the same token, this is all we knew. So, who's to say? Maybe it was, and that was
right.
What we knew. Yeah, we didn't know any better. I mean, because you couldn't tell me that in television was bad back in 78.
That is true. And not only that, they should not constantly tell you the score and who's going to win these games. I mean, because a lot of the games, it's been so long since you watched them that you don't know, you can't remember the outcome. You know, every now and then they'll show a random, you know, Utah Jazz, Lakers playoff game, or the other night it was a Mavericks. And don't tell us the score.
I'll remember some Bulls stuff.
I said
the same thing about ESPN when they're showing a game, and then the score comes across the bottom, and it's like, where? Y'all going to show the replay of the game at night and then show the score at the bottom so I can – now I don't need to watch it.
Pretty much.
They should be able to edit the score for the game you're showing out. And for this, it would be nice if they would just take that graphic that says Michael Jordan scores 69 and just let us watch it instead of counting down his points.
It pretty much. Just tell us the 1990 game, you know, between Cleveland and Chicago, and let us figure it out from there.
I'm sure if I hit this info button, which I'm about to do. Yeah. No, because I've done it before where I click the info, and they'll say, clinching game six, and L.A. wins. And I'm like, I didn't really call that. No, I don't want to watch it.
And pretty much.
But either way.
I'm just glad I'm not the only person that feels that way.
No, as long as you're talking to somebody your age, there's a good chance you're going to have somebody that's going to be with you on the argument. Now, you talk to some of these young kids, they might be like, I like having all the information. Now I know to watch that game. Now I know that's not a game where Mike only scored 23.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a different time, bro. Here's the NBA with the Olympics. And we got the NBA players playing. And I will admit, I said, hey, I'm not watching these early games because I'm not interested in watching 40-point blowouts. Well, I guess it was that way against China. Maybe. I don't know if they played Venezuela officially or if that was a practice game I'm talking about. But then the last two games have been something to discuss. What is your – and so because you've watched these games from beginning to finish, from beginning to end, I've caught like the second half of – what is your overall opinion right now of not NBA basketball, not Olympic – USA basketball overall, but of this team, what's your take on what's going on, and do you believe that these games should be – well, I know you do believe these games should be bigger blowouts, but why aren't they?
Well, it's a couple reasons. First of all, I'm glad you remembered that because I was definitely going to remind you because your exact words was, I don't want to watch them against high school competition.
Exactly. I sure did. You've known me a long time. I stand by my word.
Right. And what did I tell you? Give it time. Because I think what happened was the exhibition season, right? When we played China, Venezuela, Argentina, Nigeria, and I believe Brazil. Okay.
Okay.
I think we played China twice. Okay. China is a horrible team. Venezuela is a horrible team. And one thing you know about these European teams, even when we play Argentina, they don't try to win those type games. They don't want to show their hand. They don't want to show us what they're going to do. They're not going to run all their sets. They're going to play possum to a certain degree. So when we won those first two games, you know, and it's funny to see how the narrative changed. Because, you know, I listen to a lot of NBA radio. So when we're going through the exhibition season, the topic of the day was things like, what can we do to make the competition, you know, better? Maybe there should be an age limit. Maybe we should mix half college players, half pro players. Maybe only certain classes of pro players should be able to go. And they went through this whole discussion of how, you know, if you're an all-star, you're not eligible. You know, they're just yada, 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 so on and so forth. Now, everything has flipped, and now it's, okay, what's wrong with this team? You know, where do we go wrong? And I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. To where, first of all, you have to remember, with this team, we had a lot of guys turn down invitations. So, quite honestly, if you look at this team and I look at the roster, there's probably about 6 to 7 guys that really should not be on an Olympic team ever.
Starting with Harrison Barnes.
Okay, Harrison Barnes. I think we can remove him.
Starting with Harrison Barnes. Yes, exactly.
Our good friend Jimmy Butler, as much as we like, Jimmy Butler is not an Olympic team player.
Nope.
Trayvon Green is not an Olympic team player. DeMar DeRozan, in my opinion, no. Kyle Lowry? Definitely not. DeMarcus Cousins? I say no. So that's what, 6 guys right there that naturally you would never find on one of these type of rosters. And now we have those guys that's playing against you know, those teams, those other teams over there, they have more continuity than we have. And it's showing in the style, and it's showing in the way we play. Now, should we win? Yes. Why? Because 1 through 12, we still have the best roster. But I think it's sort of naive when people say, well, you got the best team, you're still supposed to win. I mean, hell, this is sports. We know that if that was the case, we would have right past the game to the right. If that was the case, the top four seeds would make it all the time to the NCAA tournament Final Four. Things can happen in sports. That's why we watch. And what we're seeing is this team be challenged and pushed like a lot of us didn't expect to see. Now, I figured they would have one close game, because it happens. I think people have forgotten in the past, even with the 2012 team, even with the 2018, especially the gold medal game against Spain both times, those were close games. You know, I can remember LeBron James having to hit clutch shots against Spain. Those were close games. We can sort of live with that. You know, as NBA fans, we can sort of live with gold medal games, close games, okay. But when we see our guys getting pushed three times in a row, you know, hey, it's time to throw up the worry flag, so to say. And that's where we are now. I expect, though, they've had 2 days off. You know, they really don't practice. That's another one of the things, you know, the USA team, unlike other countries, they really don't practice. So they're just going to have to clean up the issues on defense. Offensively, they'd be fine. They're still scoring 95 points a game, which is top, even on the offense. Isn't flowing as good as it was. I was talking to one of the guys in the group, and I noticed that Mike D'Antonio is no longer on the sideline. Now, previously, he's been the offensive coordinator. And if you know anything about Mike D'Antonio, the man knows his offense, especially secondary break. When we ran with a purpose. You know, after every rebound, even on a made shot, we pushed the ball with a purpose. And now you don't sort of see that on the offensive end. And we get back to the NBA style of basketball when it gets tight a lot, to where it's one high screen pick and roll, then, you know, one guy sort of goes ISO. And with the Europeans, with them, if you look at their plays, I was listening to Serbia, I went back to watch the game, so I was trying to steal a couple of their plays and put them in my book from when I coach again. And they have plays where they have six or seven options off of one play when I was looking at the move, and I was like, man, that's pretty impressive. Ours, not so much. But as long as we defend, I think we'll be okay. We play Argentina the first game. We should handle that. But the game I'm really looking forward to tomorrow morning is France versus Spain. Because I think that is going to be a great game. And I don't know if you remember, the last time France played Spain is when Nicolas Batum pulled a Draymond Green before Draymond Green. And he punched, I believe it was Juan Carlos Navarro. I mean, a blatant open hand, yeah, right there. I don't know if you remember that. So that
okay,
game yeah,
a I do not remember that. Let me say real quick, 347-637-3859 if you're listening on the website. If you're on the website, give us a call. I mean, if you're listening on the website, give us a call. Check out the website, bdsirnetwork.com. If you've called in and want to get in on the conversation, press the number one. I will say this. Like I said, I don't really back away from things I say. So, you know, like I said, I said it. I thought it was going to be some blowouts. I thought, of course, like I said, and I said it to the middle round because I figured that's when we, you know, you see your Argentinas, your Spains, your France, and teams that have some NBA talent or, you know, have played well against Team USA. But I'll say this, and I'm going to ask you a question, and it's simply because I don't want to base my assessment. I don't want to make a concrete assessment based off half a game. And
right.
So I'm going to ask you this. Do you think that is it so much that they're playing up to us or we're playing down to them? If you had to choose one over the other, middle ground, if you had to choose one or the other, which one would you choose?
I think it's them playing up to us. Because you have to realize if you know, when it comes to this basketball thing, they don't have any pressure. And, you know, we all know this from playing on sports. You know, of course, we never played at that level, but at some point in time, we've all been on a team that maybe had a shot to win, and at some point in time, we've all been on that team that you guys are supposed to win. And even though that's a good feeling, because, I mean, if that's being said, then you have the best team, and, you know, you feel good about that. But there's also a certain amount of pressure that comes with that. You know, if any other country wins silver in basketball, they'll celebrate. You know,
I'm not going to argue with your pressure comment, but these guys have been there before. So they shouldn't be – and I'm not even talking about NBA. I understand Olympics and NBA are two different scenarios, but these guys have played Olympic basketball before. So they shouldn't be nervous. I've only watched the second half of two games, so I'm not going to dispute your assessment, but I'm going to just tell you what I thought. What I thought from what I saw was that they were playing a little rigid. They were playing, I think you said it earlier, actually, they were playing NBA basketball with teams that were playing international ball. And it wasn't that the other teams are necessarily, quote, unquote, better from a skill perspective, but to your point and to the point that we've all made and that we all know if you watch any international basketball is that, you know, these guys – the international teams are throwing in a player or two that may have played in the NBA or play in the NBA, whereas we're trying to put, you know, 11, 12 guys together that unless they're on the same team, they only play with each other every now and again. And even though people like to believe that if you have the best talent, you should automatically win, you know, going back to something going back to a point you kind of alluded to, anybody that's played basketball on any level knows that you can have the best five players, but if they aren't playing together, if they aren't sharing the basketball, then you can beat them if you're on a team with discipline and a game plan. You can beat them. Fortunately for the NBA, at the end of these Olympic games, the talent is doing what it needs to do in those last 3 to 4 minutes and getting it done. But I also believe that at the end of the day, regardless of how we look at it, this isn't the best NBA talent. We know it. Other countries' fans are sitting back going, the NBA players aren't that good. There's no Chris Paul. There's no LeBron. There's no Steph Curry. There's no Russ Westbrook. You know, our best players are not there. So this leads me to another question I want to ask you, Paris. And I'm not one of those people that – you know, I liked the Olympics of the amateurism, but I also like winning. Right. So here's my question to you. It appears that if you go back to when we first brought the NBA players, was that 92? It was 92, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so when you go back to 92 and 96, you had the best players that wanted to play. They wanted to play, and we ran Russia.
Right.
Now give you know, we got to be up front. We got to be honest. International teams, international players have improved. But do you think part of the problem is that guys don't really want, they don't have that same patriotic feeling? Or do you think it's simply, well, let me just keep it there to one question. Do you think that the patriotism aspect of it doesn't really play into effect anymore as it used to?
I wouldn't think that is it, because guys have an option, and a lot of those guys that you named, if you just think about it, John Wall was injured. Damian Lillard, you know, John Wall had double knee procedures. Damian Lillard had plantar fasciitis in his feet. You know, Anthony Davis had surgery. LeBron James, a guy like that, you know, says he needs rest. Hey, he goes to the finals like 6 years in a row and has been playing international ball. You understand that? Curry was beat up. So a lot of our top players aren't there because of either their, you know, hey, I just need a break, or physical, you know, situations. You know, I know Bradley Beal pulled out because he said he wants to concentrate on his contract. We don't know how hard it is to sign a deal. You know, when he said that, I'm like, well, nobody's going to go through more this summer than Kevin Durant. But, hey, fair enough. You know, do what you do. So I don't think it's a non-patriotic thing. But I think that's the beauty of USA basketball too, and that's the climate that they want to, you know, the culture that they want to create is that, hey, if you want to, you play, and if you don't, you know, no one's going to hold it against you. Fair enough, we just move on to the next guy, and that's the culture that they want to have.
Well, let me ask you a similar question in a different way, and then we're going to get to the 404 area code. We'll get to the caller. Let me ask you this. Do you think the rule that they have in place that says you need to be on the world, was it the world championship team, be on the Olympic team, do you think that maybe they should take, say, three spots that they can leave open for guys that didn't play in the world championships, guys that are your top players in the league?
Well, that's not a rule that you have to be on the world championship team to be on the Olympic team.
Well, I know they were talking about that. They wanted the guys to play.
Now, that's something that they like to do as far as continuity purposes because, you know, we had a team 2 years ago, and, you know, Kyrie was there along with, you know, Derrick Rose, James Harden, Anthony Davis, you know, those guys. That was one where Durant pulled out and Rudy Gay had to fill in for him. So that's not a rule, and I wouldn't want to see that rule. I think the only thing that needs to change, honestly, is, you know, and we're sort of put at a disadvantage as fans in a way because we don't get to see a lot of international basketball. So, you know, we don't get to see, and that's another complaint I have with NBA TV. Because I know a couple years ago, it was short international And now they stopped showing that, and I wish they still would.
Yeah, they
would show the Euro Leagues where you could watch Germany play against France, and also, you
they
know, we
would.
Really don't have a feel for these teams. So we're sort of at the mercy of, you know, maybe the talking heads that has sort of set us all up. They told us, hey, the USA got this.
Yeah.
And then after you watch the first, you know, the exhibition game, hey, we're good. Now, the exhibition games, maybe going forward, you really try to play the best teams, you know, in the world during the exhibition. Even if you take an L, that's okay. But you need to play better teams. But European teams and coaches, you know, one thing that France says that I agree with them on, because he's wrong about 75% of the time, is when they get the tournaments, they will lose games on purpose. You know, as far as seeding and things like that, they hold players out. And we sort of don't have that luxury. You know, for us, any loss is like the end of the world. You know, where they will basically, hey, that's okay. We want to lose this game because we want to finish in third, so that way we don't have to play the USA until the championship. You know, and I believe Lithuania did that last night. So that's another difference in the mindset between our country and other countries. Because we're going to lose again at some point in time. It's going to happen in
all right.
Lifetime. We are
going to
lose one of these games. And
let me get to this call.
When that happens.
All right, let me get to this call. We got the 404 area code, the ATL, on with Paris and Corey. Who is this?
Yeah, this is Nas, man. How you doing?
Nas, what's
going
on, brother? How you doing this evening?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Sitting there listening to y'all, man. Yeah, there's a whole lot packed into that, man. First thing to kind of piggyback on what he's saying, I don't think the patriotism ideal is in play because every loss is a calamity. So just the pride of you as a basketball player and not facing the humiliation and the infamous Jordan cry meme is more than enough to make sure the guys are playing hard and dedicated once they decide to join in. Because – you know, if you weren't and you really had reservations about it, then you wouldn't do it. You make any excuse you can, light surgery, whatever you have to say, you would do it not to play. The other part about us having pros in it, yeah, I would prefer we had amateurs in it and young men, but there'd have to be some type of age rule to where the other countries can't send grown men out to play against our youth because that's what was happening previously when we were sending college boys over to play against grown men. And your other point about just teamwork as far as when you're putting together basically an all-star team and trying to create a function within that, but you're playing against guys who played in, you know, 13, and since they were 13 years old together, their sets are more crisp. They know the speed of a guy cutting, a guy setting a pick, how their plays are going to look defensively, how somebody's going to play, and, you know, all those different tricks of the trade you learn from playing with somebody for a long time. So that's a huge advantage. And the three-point line is the great equalizer. So if somebody has a game where they shoot 40-plus or 50 you know, God forbid, from three, then that's going to even things up and make the game more difficult. And, you know, we've seen that throughout the years when we've had some of these Olympic games. Not to mention sometimes we are really bad on pick-and-roll defense, and that goes to some of our bigs who've gotten so used to playing against trash bigs who won't shoot or won't roll properly, and then they kind of face the wrath of them at times. So, yeah, I really like watching it, though, man. It's good basketball to me, man, especially when we get to running.
Let me ask you a question, Nas, and then, Terrence, I want you to answer as well. Nas, what are your thoughts on the makeup of the team? Not necessarily the skills of the players, because we know they're all skilled players. What is your thoughts on the makeup of the team? Paris got into it a little bit earlier when he mentioned a couple guys that he didn't think would be there if the top dogs were available. But even with what is available, assuming those, you know, keeping the guys out that are out, were there any substitutions you'd make with guys that wanted to play that were available to make the makeup maybe a little more cohesive?
Yeah, I mean, there's some redundancy in certain positions, so I could agree with people complaining about that. Coach K's rotations have kind of been baffling. There have been times where Draymond should have been playing, and then there are other times where you're like, man, don't put Draymond in this game, which has been weird considering some of the pick-and-roll damage they've been taking. But, man, let me tell you something else too, man. This Team USA gig is the greatest gig you could ever get as a coach. If you're a college coach, you get the high profile of it. It helps in recruiting. And you're essentially, you know, just the guy to always remind people to focus, be serious, this and that. It's not necessarily high-level coaching going on. So, I mean, it is the biggest welfare job you could ever find, man, coaching Team USA against everybody else. It's an abundance of riches. And even managing that, no matter what, there's going to be some criticism, you know what I mean, as far as the rotation. But, yeah, if other guys would have came on, some people wouldn't play. But I'm wondering about his rotations. They are weird.
All right, Paris, same question to you. And do you agree or disagree with what Nas is saying about the rotations?
I agree. The rotations to me are honestly okay, besides I think that I would sit DeMarcus Cousins down more. The one surprise that I think a lot of people are realizing that I've been saying for a while, you know, DeAndre Jordan gets his reputation as being a real good defensive player because he gets a lot of weak side blocks. But you're seeing him being exposed for one, he's sort of a small dude, and two, he's really not a good defensive player unless he's, you know, blocking the shot. And we also know that with DeMarcus Cousins. The one thing this team could really use, honestly, is a pure point guard. You know, I'm not a big Chris Paul guy, but a guy like Chris Paul would be very valuable in getting guys in sets and making sure the ball moves around. You know, we all like Uncle Drew, but Uncle Drew's mentality is the heat. That's what he does. Uncle Drew's going to kill you. He's going to give you 25 and maybe 3 or 4. That's just what he does. But with this type of team, you need a pure facilitator to make sure everything on the court is working. I really don't know exactly. I have to sit back and look. Because so many of the guys that I would, you know, you would think I would like to see there had to pull out due to injury. You know, and I was thinking point guards because Kyle Lowry doesn't look like, and he's playing hard. So you know, I don't want to kill, you know, Pat Lowry because he is trying, and he's one of the few guys that's really trying to defend. But he really shouldn't be there. And he looked like after the season was over, he went back and eating Dunkin' Donuts because you can tell the dude's a little chunky and out of shape. You know, so he really shouldn't be there. And I was thinking, you know, would a Jeff Teague play better? And I don't know about that one either. You know, Rondo, you really couldn't take him. So, you know, with no Chris Paul out of the guys left, I'd have to sit back and think for a while of, you know, who could be a point guard that could fill in. You know, I think Bradley Beal would have been valuable. But if not, then we have redundancy in positions, because you have guys like, you know, Jimmy Butler and Harrison Barnes and DeMar DeRozan, and they're basically all the same version of the same dude. You know, so you have three guys that's basically going to give you the same thing. So some of those positions are redundant.
What are your thoughts on Russ?
Russ, you know, hey, I take Russ just because because he would just play like he's crazy. So definitely,
yeah.
I would take Russ. You know, you take Russ over Fat Lowry, and you know, hey, you can put Russ and Kyrie in the backcourt together, and get you a double, you know, 2-point guard. So that's something else that Coach K has usually done. Coach K usually starts 2-point guards. You know, because remember, he had Curry playing the 2 on a world championship game, and he had Kyrie starting at the point. And he usually plays 2-point guards, but he's not able to do it with this squad.
Yeah, I just mentioned that this particular team, and again, I'm basing my comments off what I've seen, not overall, so take them for what they're worth, is that they could use a little energy. From when I've watched, they seem to have been, I don't want to say going through the motions because that might be lowering the level a little bit much, but it looked like they could use a little bit of Russ, you know, what Russ brings, that getting in guys' face and getting them focused. And I think Russ could have brought that. But, again, you know, we have high skill level guys. I'm still baffled, Paris and Nod. I'm still baffled on how Harris Barnes made this squad. Even with all the guys sitting out, I'm still confused on how Harrison Barnes. Are we going to basically, just for the sake of fun and entertainment, say he's the Christian Laettner of the team? He's the college guy that is there.
You know what?
There.
If you think about it, Harrison Barnes has had a rough summer. If you think about it, I mean, first of all,
except for the contract.
Right, he went completely missing in the finals. It got to a point where Cleveland would even guard him. They're like, look, you do whatever you want to do. We don't care because you can't make a shot. So you have that.
Right.
They basically cast you aside for Kevin Durant, even though we know he landed on his feet with, what, $94, $95 million, so nobody's going to feel sorry for him.
Ooh,
but at the same
that's a nice cushion.
You know, yeah, at the same time, you know, these guys all have pride, so, you know, that plays a part. And now you're added to the Olympic team, and you're the DMP CD guy. So all in all,
you're the Christian Laettner of the team. Yeah.
And you still get the haircut, no matter where he is. So
right. And if I can add one more,
Go ahead.
I think the mentality of everybody has to be high profile or, you know, some type of star is a big mistake that they make too. I say you get the first 7 guys as stars. And then you just plug pieces that, you know, have a certain, you know, utility knife weight to
them. Rebounders, 3-point shooters.
Right. So instead
That's
of Harrison Barnes,
guy.
I bring Sean Livingston because he's going to play 3 positions. He's going to guard the hell out of people. And it doesn't matter if certain games I don't need him. But when I do use him, he's going to be an added, you know, protective piece to use. And he's got many different uses. So a guy like Harrison Barnes, to where if he's not shooting it well, he's not worth a thing to you. You know, there's really no reason to bring
him. He hasn't shot it well in a
while. Right.
You know,
a guy like Sean Livingston, lower profile, I think those kind of guys you need to fill out the bench with. And that goes for, you know, a big of the same caliber.
You know what I honestly thought is that, you know, remember when Andre Iguodala was on the Olympic team? And we were all going, why the heck is Andre Iguodala on the Olympic team? I think that they thought, okay, we could sort of get the same, you know, that would be the Harrison Barnes role. He would play that role. Because there's usually always 1 or 2 guys on the Olympic team that you're like, what the heck are they doing there? And I told you a guy for the World Championship team that actually played real good was Kenneth Faried. You know, he played real good.
Yeah, he did, actually.
You know, international ball. I didn't expect it. He was one of those guys, I was like, Kenneth Faried, really? Is this all we can do? You know, but he was very effective playing international ball. And I think that's the key. And, you know, it's not a perfect science. And I think that sometimes, you know, hey, everybody makes mistakes. And I think in the evaluation process, every now and then, they might pick 1 or 2 guys that really don't fit. Because even Rudy Gay played good. And I hate Rudy Gay, but he actually played good internationally.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
what
so
I think
it should be there.
I think it goes back, I think, partially to what, you know, Nas was saying about the high-profile guys. But I think when you look at it, when you have guys that are used to being, quote-unquote, the guy, even these guys that are lower-level guys, many of them are considered the guy. You know?
Right.
And when have a lot of the guys, then that means you're not having a guy that's accustomed to making that defensive rotation to get back. You're used to having, you know, this isn't the guy that's accustomed to having to go get the offensive board. He's not accustomed to standing over in the corner waiting for the pass. And I think that's where you bring in these guys to Naz's point, guys that aren't typically these guys, they know how to come in and fit in with the team as opposed to trying to have the team fit in around them. But, I mean, you know, again, the talent has a couple of nice 20-point wins and a gold medal can make all of this go away. We're Americans. We know how this works. Winning cures everything.
I honestly think we're going to take, to borrow a line from my man, Keith Jackson, I honestly think we're going to take Argentina out behind the woodshed. I really do. I think we're going to take them out behind the woodshed, and I think that second game is going to be real close against either France or Spain. And once we get whoever we see in that gold medal game, especially if it's Australia again, who I think we feel like, okay, we owe them one, we go give them one.
Right.
That's the way I think this
tournament
is going to play out.
All right. Now, Naz, we're going to get into a little fantasy football. Are you interested in getting back in on that conversation?
Yeah, I don't mind. Maybe I'll pick up a few tips on this team, man. I got second last year. I need to get that first. Need to bring the money home this year. So might as well, man.
Okay. All right, stand by. I'm going to come back to you. Stand by. I'm going to come right back to you. All right, Paris, with that said, let's get into it, man. Fantasy football season is upon us. You have people talking about – first of all, let me say this. Now, you know I'm an Ohio State fan. I like Ezekiel Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hear one more person say that Ezekiel Elliott is the number one fantasy running back, I might have to choke somebody out. The dude has not played and I'm sorry, now he's played – did he even play in the first preseason game?
No.
Because I know he had a foot or a shoulder issue or something. So this guy hasn't played a preseason game, and people want to anoint him. Now, and that's not to say that he can't have a good year, but when was the last time a rookie halfback came in and was the number one guy, or even the number two guy? I mean, Melvin Gordon wasn't it. Bishop Sankin is. Adrian Peterson.
Now, we are talking about Cowboy fans. And we are talking about the famous line of, with our offensive line, you know, because let them tell it, me and you can gain 1,000 yards behind their offensive line. So after seeing Ezekiel Elliott in college, they are just assuming this guy's about to run 1,400 yards and 15 and 16 touchdowns, probably catch 50 balls to go along with it. I don't see that happening. I think he is going to be a hog. He is going to be a horse because he's real good. The kid is good. I like the kid. He got to stop doing that stomach thing that he does. He can let that go. But I like the kid. But I think he will be very, very overdrafted this year. I think he will really be overdrafted this year.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I tend to stay away from players that I – quote unquote like, because it's like when I do the football pool, I try to avoid Bears because I know at some point I'm going to do something stupid, because it's hard to pick against your squad. It's hard, and when you're talking about fantasy football, a lot of times people over draft based on emotion, based on personal feeling. As you said, I think eventually Ezekiel will be that dude. And by eventually, I really mean by year two. If I've learned nothing else about fantasy football, is that the halfback position? I can't think. I mean, I guess you've got maybe Todd Gurley. But typically, rookie halfbacks not carry squads, typically. Now, where more and more teams are going to dual backs, maybe not 50-50 dual backs, but, you know, it's not like it used to be either, where it was 85, you know, it was first, second down, and then you know, bring in, you know, a third down back, or sometimes it was first, second, and third if a guy could catch. And you would bring another guy in for a series or two here or there. But, I mean, I'm looking right now at the list of halfbacks, and this is how and I don't want to say slim pickings it is, but I'm just looking at one rating system here, and 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Looking in the top 10, you have Mark Ingram at 11, J. Anderson at 12, Thomas Rawls, Matthews. These are guys that are good halfbacks, but if you put their same skill set and ability in the league 10 years ago, they aren't top 15 guys.
Right.
What is your take from a fantasy football perspective when it comes to drafting? And let's just talk for the sake of making it defined. You're in a PPR league.
Good.
Where are you taking a guy? Exactly. You know, I'm in a league that isn't, but I want to make sure that we're all on the same page. PPR
right.
league. Who's your number one halfback right here?
The man I said last year that I would take his number one halfback going into this year, and that's David Johnson. I believe in David Johnson's
yeah.
talent. I think David Johnson
is nice.
I know the Cardinals like to throw the ball around a lot, and when I look at the other guys that might be rated ahead of him, I don't trust Le'Veon Bell's knee. I think they're going to try to work Le'Veon Bell in. I think his backup is going to get a lot of work as well. I like Todd Gurley, but the Rams offense sucks. He's going to see a lot of 8, 9 men in the box. He's still going to do his thing, but he wasn't a third down back last year. So you got to remember, PPR, so you want guys that's going to stay on the field. And, you know, you have the old man River, Adrian Peterson. I guess you can pull over him, too. And sooner or later, that train is going to fall off the tracks, and that's another guy that doesn't catch. So when it comes to PPR, you know, now that's what I'm saying, honestly, depending on where I am in the draft, I'm usually a wide receiver type guy, you know, unless I just see some real good value, because I believe in the later rounds, there's a couple of running backs that I have identified this year that I think are going to be sleepers that I'm willing to take a chance on. I'll only give you one of them just because we might end up in a league together, but I saw them doing a little research, and I think I like Ryan Matthews this year. Another guy high up in the draft. I'm not going to say high up, but a guy that I'm really looking forward to, if I could get him in the fourth round, is Eddie Lacy and Lamar Miller.
Yeah.
That's another guy I have my eye on this year. If I could start out and get two wide receivers in that first two rounds, where I can get a guy like a show dog, like a Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham, and then I can sneak back in the second round and maybe find me a Julian Edelman. Then in the third and fourth round, if I can end up with a Lamar Miller or Eddie Lacy, I'm halfway home. Because I'm definitely away from quarterbacks, like I've always done.
My situation, if I'm looking at my best team, coming off of last year at least, I have the 11th pick this year because I was the runner-up, and I am keeping Antonio Brown and Hopkins.
Okay.
I'm going to keep those two. And one of my boys at work today said, man, but what are you going to do about the halfback position? I said, last year I didn't have great halfbacks. I got two show dogs right there at the top of the draft. If Hopkins would go in the top 12, 13, the top 14 picks, and so is Antonio Brown. So why would I? Yeah. Well, I said, why would I give those two up when we know that teams are not leaning on running backs the way they used to? I can grab those two, and in the third round, when it comes back around to me, I can get me a mediocre halfback, or I can take a chance on a rookie halfback that'll give me just enough. You know, like you, I've never been one to go high on quarterbacks. The one time I went high on a quarterback, I can't even remember who it was, but he ended up having a bad season.
I tell you what, the one time that I did, because I've always waited on quarterbacks, and in the past years, I would always draft Tony Romo in about the 7th round, and then it went to Ben Roethlisberger. The guys have caught up to me now, so they started stealing my dog on quarterback. So I have another guy identified this year that I think I can get in the 7th round that I won't say just yet. But I'm pretty sure I can get him in the 7th round. But the one time I did break from my mold is 2 years ago, and I said, doggone it, I'm going to get one of these high-powered quarterbacks because I've never had one, and I'm going to do it. And I took Drew Brees, and my team, we barely made the playoffs. I was out the first round. I was like, never again.
All right.
I will never do that again.
I'm not going to keep Nas on hold too long. We're going to bring him in and see what fantasy information he is looking for Najee back in. So,
yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it if you stop bringing up that Cowboys thing with the running back. Sir, I need somebody to make that mistake, so please don't tell people that. That will help. The second part would be, don't sleep on quarterbacks early or top wide receivers early. The Wall Street move.
Oh, no, neither one of us sleep on top receivers.
Right.
We're all in on receivers.
Right. But hold on, because there's a different way. When you run the Wall Street move, you essentially grab two number one wide receivers or two top quarterbacks. And by week four, you'll be able to force a trade that you wouldn't be able to believe. Last year, I was able to get Gronk and the Denver Broncos defense because I stashed Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. I dirtied the game up. Everybody was mad at me, but they had to come to the table and make a deal because they picked the wrong quarterback, and I had two. So I had all the cards in my favor.
The only negative I have to that is that's like buying a wedding ring for a girl you go on a first date with, and you're hoping that it works out. I prefer –
Have you ever seen a fantasy football owner panic in week four? Do you know what kind of trades I was getting offered?
I have, but I'm more – and this is just my theory. If your theory works for you, it's fantasy football. Everybody has their theory. Plus, you know your people that you're against better than I do. Myself, personally, I like to draft the best players I can for my team. And if I do what I'm supposed to do, I won't have to worry about taking the team. That's just me. That's just me.
It gives you flexibility, though. If somebody's not playing up to their potential or somebody gets hurt, you're the one with the card. So I like to get myself
That's what I do later on. When you're around the eighth and ninth round, if you're confused on who you want, if, you know, guys started drafting a certain position, then I might say, well, I already got Jordan Reed. Man, I get this number two tight end because I know I saw some Houston as well.
I tell you what. The guys I play with in the leagues that I play in, we had a guy to try. And he even told us that during the draft. Because he took two quarterbacks in the first four rounds. And his theory was, well, I'll be able to trade one of them because you guys are going to need one of them. Needless to say, nobody went to the table, and he didn't make the playoffs.
So what quarterback did he draft? Like,
took,
if you do a plan
Aaron
badly,
Rodgers.
I can't blame the plan.
No, he took Aaron Rodgers and another quality quarterback. It was Rodgers and it was somebody else. I remember one of them being Rodgers. And his team pretty much was like, blah, okay, you got a good quarterback, but I mean, you can only play one, so the other one's sitting on your bench, and it's a 12-team league, so, yeah, good luck with that.
I wouldn't recommend this to any rookies out here because you got to be deep within football rosters to know where the sleepers are. Because I had a slew of sleeper running backs that I was picking up, dropping, but I was matching points. As long as you're staying within a realm of points against somebody who's got a number one running back, you got an advantage. And that's what I was able to find. So you got to be really good waiver wise. Really good.
But see, you know, the other side of that thing is that, you know, it's to take a step further as to what Paris was his example, is that one thing is when you have those top quarterbacks, this is what I told the guy last year. I said, yeah, I hear you, but that guy is sitting on your bench and he's not serving you any purpose. So you could trade him for what I'm offering you, or you can keep him on your bench while you're winning like four games. Your call. And that's
you're dictating to me at my Pro Bowl quarterback. I wasn't born last night. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just a guy who didn't feel the rest of the roster.
You know what a Pro Bowl quarterback is that isn't in the starting run lineup? A bench player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just saying.
All I'm saying is this strategy can be worked very well if you know what you're doing, filling out the rest of the roster.
Well,
but
and,
no matter
and,
what, like you said,
and
you
that's
don't
why
have
I'm saying,
again,
it's fair to,
and
it's
you got
to
find
keep in
yourself.
Mind that I don't know the level of the players you're playing with. You know, and that's why I'm not going to knock your theory, because if you're playing with people that fall for it, then you go with it. I know the guys that I'm playing with will laugh at me.
Oh, I got laughed at and cussed out in week one. But guess what? Like I said, by week four, I was able to get Gronk in the Denver defense because people were desperate and they had to take what I offered. So, I mean, it
okay.
goes, man.
I tell you what. That's a good theory. But the dudes I draft with, if you try something like that, you're going to be left out cold. You're not going to have nothing else. And your team is going to be real, real bad. Because you need some real bums drafting. You need some real bums drafting to be able to take those type of players and still be able to form a team. If you say running to the waiver wire, the league come in, there is trash on that waiver wire. You can't just stash and, you know, pick and drop each week and 5 points on that waiver wire.
Put it like this. Think about people who drafted Trey Mason last year, and all these other type of guys like that. Well, you know, it happens. It happens. Later in the round, people draft guys like that, and they think something's going to happen. And because of that, you're able to find things, man. I look through that waiver wire, man, and at the end of the season, the people with the most moves in the waiver wire were all the ones who made the playoffs. In the leagues I was in. So the people who were active, they made moves and adjusted to what was going on. Other people were still looking at the preseason rankings and going by Todd McShay said and Matthew Berry said and such and such said. You know what I mean? You gotta be liquid out there.
I think you have to find a nice mix. You know, I listen to those guys, but I follow my gut, because if I'm gonna go down, I want to go down on my own way of thinking as opposed to going down on what a quote-unquote expert has.
Right.
That's just me. Because if I
if they were that much of an expert, they'd be in Vegas,
years,
not on ESPN.
Dude, if I had to tell you how many times in the last 10 to 15 years I went by who they say I should start.
Right.
Man. Well, stand by for me, Nas. We're going to come back to you in 1 second. Paris, let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
Now, in the league that I run, the way we do it is the top players drafted in the top four rounds cannot be kept. Period.
Okay.
They can't be kept. So I'm looking at my later round picks. I made a trade for Jordan Reed. I had Adrian Peterson, and I traded Adrian Peterson for Jordan Reed, and I can't remember, it was like two other players, because I had some injuries. And and I was also looking at the fact that I was chasing for the playoffs. I needed to win every game, and we played two games a week, and I needed people to lose multiple games. So I said, I might set myself up, because even if I make the playoffs, I'm not going to keep the team ahead of me. I was that bad by the end of the season. So I traded for Jordan Reed. So now I'm looking at Jordan Reed for a 13th-round pick, and I'm looking at Jordan Reed for a 13th-round pick, and I'm looking at keeping – what's my man's name? Tyrod Taylor, for who I drafted in the 14th round. So here's my question, Paris. Jordan Reed in the 13th, Tyrod Taylor in the 14th round. How much do you like those keepers?
Are those the only two guys you're keeping?
Well, yeah. Well, you can only keep two. And like I said, people drafted in the first four rounds can't be kept. So I can't keep LeSean McCoy. I can't keep – well, Ben Roethlisberger I drafted in the 5th round. So I can't keep him.
Right.
Latavius Murray was a top 4-round pick. Can't keep him. Jarvis Landry, if I recall, was a 7th or 8th-round pick. Can't keep him. Julius Thomas, I can't remember where I drafted him. But, again, it's kind of one of those situations where you're trying to find value with talent. So you're talking 13 and 14. You're talking Tyrod Taylor and Jordan Reed for 13th and 14th-round picks.
I don't like Tyrod Taylor. I love Jordan Reed, except you know with Jordan Reed, it's just, you know he's going to miss games, so the only question is how many is he's going to miss, because he's made of, like,
right.
something between, like, glass and, like, soft paper mache, and, you know, that's what he has running through him, so he's going to get hurt, but, man, he produces when he plays. Yeah, I would probably go with those two. I mean, my keeper lead was easy.
Well,
I kept Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. I mean, those were easy choices.
Well, and see, that's the thing. We like to keep it fresh because, you know, sometimes we have a little turnover or we try to bring somebody new in. It's hard to bring
right.
new people into a league when all the best players are gone. But the way we do it,
right.
the top four-round guys automatically come back, and we have contracts. So you can only keep guys for 2 years. The year you pick them up is the first year. Then you keep them the second year. And I'm not keeping Tyrod Taylor to be my starter, but I'm figuring if I can get him back up like Tyrod Taylor, 14th round pick, that's a win. That's a good start to my new season. At least that's what I'm thinking. The rest of my team was hot garbage. I got Martavis Bryant. We all know what happened to him. I got Julian
right.
Edelman late because somebody dropped him because he got hurt. I picked him up. I had Brock
Osweiler. What's wrong? You have Julian Edelman in a PPR league?
Yeah, PPR. He would cost me a fifth round pick. I just don't trust his, you know, with Tom Brady not being there. I don't really know how that's going to play out.
I am keeping Julian Edelman.
You're
I
keeping Julian Edelman.
Now,
let me just make sure you got the rule. When you pick up a guy off of waivers and you keep him, he costs you a fifth-round pick. So you're keeping him as a fifth-round pick over Tyrod Taylor, I'm assuming, since you don't like him, for a 14th-round pick.
Right. Yeah. We're talking 12 teams?
I got it. Yeah, actually, right now it's 10, and that's part of the problem. We're trying to bring in two.
Oh, yes. Definitely. 10-team league? Oh, all day. Yes. Yes.
Man, I'm scared of Julian Edelman, man.
Hey, you should be just as afraid of Jordan Reed. I mean, but Edelman.
Yeah, but Jordan Reed is not.
Edelman's been practicing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure in the last 2 years he's played more games than Reed. Even with Tom Brady being out those first four games, Julian Edelman's the type of guy where he's going to be productive. With a lot of quarterbacks, the way they move him around, he runs little short routes. You still have Gronk and Bennett out there. I feel like Edelman a whole lot. I have him finishing in the top five in PPR this year. Edelman is a home. He is a home.
The beautiful thing about it is I don't have to make the keeper. The keepers, we have our draft on the Sunday of the holiday weekend, so that's the 4th of September.
Right.
So our keepers are due the week before. So I still have a little bit of time to make a decision. I'd like to see a little preseason work from them and see where we go there. Before we get ready to get out of here, which we are going to be doing real soon, let me bring Nas back in to see if he had any other questions or any other strategies that we're going to take shots at. Because we didn't really give him a fair shout at last, but he said it. We went at Nas, you're back in. You got anything else for us, man? As far as your what was
that's
that?
Well, it's not like y'all giving away money. I want to get in on that.
Hey man, it is what it is. I'm in with a former Falcon, one of the two live stews, a few radio guys. You know, it's a competitive league, real good league.
That's
everybody
okay.
knows football. But catching people slipping is my forte. And Mike Thomas of New Orleans is probably going to be the high-value pick. If you can get it at the right slot, that's one that's really going to hit for you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's going to be a really good one to pick up. And the other one is look at how devalued DeMarco Murray is going to be because he's going to be splitting carries. DeMarco Murray is going to be a value pick late. So if you have an emergency situation, you got to pick up. Look at those two late if you made any mistakes early on. And remember, when people quit on somebody in the first couple weeks, some of those guys are worth stashing. Last year, man, Man. I come up off stashing a few guys and holding on a few weeks?
And see, that's why I don't like making moves early. That's why I don't like trading early, because I hate. I'm going to tell you what happened to me last year. Real quick story. I drafted Tevin Coleman and Dante Freeman. Something was going on with my halfback situation, and I said, well, I've been waiting around. I'm going to keep Coleman, because Coleman was the one that they kept kind of saying was going to be the guy, going to be the guy. So I dropped Freeman. I can't even remember who I picked up. And then I dropped Freeman on like a Wednesday or a Thursday. And then that week, Freeman goes off. And I said to myself, dude, you just needed three more days. If you waited four more days, you would have been straight. And that's where my season went down in the tank.
Those are the worst when you do them, man. Those are the worst.
At some point in time, we have all released that dude, and then he goes off, and you know, I'll never get no back. But that's another reason, too, honestly, why I wait on running backs, because if it's one thing during the year, at the end of the year, there's going to be 3 to 4 really productive fantasy backs that no one talking about now. It happened
right.
Like last year at Rome. Who the hell thought
that? And defenses, Paris. And defense.
And defense.
How many people jumped up high on Seattle? How many people jumped up high on Seattle last year?
Yeah,
every
a lot of people got
that
their
one
heart
guy
broken.
That jumped up high on Seattle.
Yes,
every league.
Did.
And a dude drafted Seattle last year, one league, in like the fifth round. And I looked at him, I said, what in the hell are you smoking, man?
Man, you just let me
okay.
add the advice of the great Herman Edwards. Don't tweet. Same thing with your roster. Don't come home from the bar and feel like tinkering with your phone and, well, let me drop this guy and pick up this guy. Don't watch NFL films late at night and say, oh, man, this dude's about to do this. Let me do that. Wait until the morning, see if it makes sense, and then do the move. Otherwise, hold on. Give it a few minutes or a few hours.
I have a theory, and this is what I do. Every Tuesday, I set my lineup for the week. I set it for two reasons. One reason is because I want to make sure that I, in case I forget, something happens, life happens. I want to make sure, you know, internet goes down Saturday night to Sunday morning. I want to make sure I got my lineup in. But basically, I like to do that because of what you just said, Nas. I don't want to play with it throughout the week. I set my guys up, and I go with it. And the only thing that's going to deter me is if I study a matchup and I see something in the matchup or if injury happens. I am not one of those people that likes to jump my lineup around all week, because then you end up second-guessing yourself. And the worst thing you can do is second-guess yourself in fantasy football. You know, my theory is go down with your dog. I don't want to sit here and take my dog out because he's going against a tough defense.
Oh.
Because if I'm going to lose, I want to lose with my guy. I don't want to lose with my guy.
Now, Corey, I believe me and you had that conversation.
We had that conversation.
All,
we sure did.
And that's always been my theory. If I draft a guy early and, you know, let's say, for instance, I draft a David Johnson early, right? And, you know, I got him in the second round. If it's a playoff week, and even if I have David Johnson going into Seattle, and say you have another guy, you know, Ingram, and he's playing against, you know, the Falcons, I am not going to be cute and sit Johnson for Ingram. Because if I lose because Johnson was playing, I can live with that. But if I lose because I got cute, put in someone else because I was afraid of Seattle's defense, it's going to be a long off season.
That's the problem with pats on the back, though. Because when you make one of those moves and it works, and you're looking at the rest of the league like, yeah, did y'all see that? Y'all see that GM in over here? Did y'all see that? And that'll lead you to do it again and set yourself up for the downfall. You dare right on that one, bro. You dare right on that one.
We have a saying in my sports group, Nas, and it's called don't eat cute. That's one of my favorite things, and that's what we call that when you the smartest guy in the room, and you decide, you know what, I'm going to say Tom Brady because they said the weather's going to be real bad, and I'm going to start that again.
Let me ask you this, Nas. And Paris just mentioned it, and we like to do this with callers that are new or that we're not familiar with. Are you on Facebook, Nas?
No, I'm on Twitter. I had to leave the intellectual wasteland of Facebook and go to Twitter. It became too much, man. Family members with memes.
So you went.
It's dangerous.
You went from the intellectual wasteland of Facebook to the I'm going to press in and then delete it and say it didn't happen world of Twitter.
Yes. I went to the hyperactive social just warrior liar section, make up a life section of Twitter to avoid Facebook. But look, man, I got family members, man. Look, the memes that I would see and the historical inaccuracies that I couldn't correct because of feelings, I had to leave, man.
Let me just say this, Nas. If you decide to get back to Facebook, or if you decide to get Facebook and you just want to join a sports group, join the Sports Authority, man. We're in there. It's cats that, you know, we debate. We don't always agree, but we keep it civil. We're grown men. There's a couple of women. Well, Nico, we got one female. But we keep it civil. You know, and so if you're just looking to get back to Facebook, create a profile, just put your name on it, just join the Sports Authority. We'll know you when we see the name. Nas, if you want to get in there and just have some sports conversation, man, you're welcome.
So, indeed, man, I'll check that out. That's a good idea. I didn't even think about coming up with a fake profile.
Yeah,
good idea.
We have a no N-word rules in the group also. I like to put that out.
We try to get grown, man.
Grown man stuff, indeed.
I'm with it.
Y'all have a good night, man.
If you're interested in Sports Authority, and you know, as long as you're using your name, Nas, I'm sure Paris will remember you. I'm not an admin, but we will be looking for you, man. Hopefully you get in there, and hopefully you come over there and get some good conversation with us, man, so that we can find out how your theory works on drafting.
Indeed.
All right, Nas, we appreciate the call, brother. What was it?
Oh yeah, well. I'll talk to him. Now, call in next week,
because
I got another theory I
want to
run by.
Oh, cool. I need as many as I can before the 4th, man. I'm ready.
All right.
All right, man. Y'all have a good one.
Brother. Appreciate you.
Hey, you too, brother.
No doubt.
Yep.
Yeah. It's nice, man, when we get callers that aren't the typical caller that jump in. It's always good to have different opinions and have some new look, new take on some of our opinions. Always good. Because last week we had Tom, and Tom calls in sporadically, and we usually talk Lakers. I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of glad we didn't have to talk Lakers this week. I don't really care about the Lakers that much, and I want to talk about them 2 weeks in a row.
And it's my fault.
Lakers are hot garbage.
I used to set time up.
You throw fastballs right down the middle, and you get them going.
The Lakers, and then it's like 15 minutes later, and Tom is still, pontificating on the Lakers, and that's my fault.
But Tom always has a good, you know, legitimate argument. Whatever he's saying, he's not just speaking off the cuff with some random, you know, blah blah blah. Everything he's saying has some kind of point to it, and I'm straight with that. So hopefully we'll get Tom back in here next week, and hopefully we get Nas back again, man, because he was a good caller, man. Good information. Even though we disagreed a little bit with him on the theory, hey man, I guess Stacey King, KYP, know your personnel. If you know you're playing with people, you can get over on them. You set yourself up to get over on them, I guess. I mean, you might as well. Whatever works.
And next week we can get into Aaron Rodgers' comments, because I meant to bring that up today, but we definitely should get into that next week because it's something we have.
Well, I mean, if you want to elaborate on his comments before we get out of here.
Well, you know, It goes to something we have talked about offline quite a bit as far as, you know, athletes sort of in the social world and how, you know, for, you know, white athletes, they sort of actually have it easy. You know, it's not their fault. You know, but a lot of things, quote unquote, don't really involve them directly. You know, they don't face a lot of the pressures that most, you know, black athletes face within the community. So first of all, you need to speak out. And if you do speak out, you have to be locked up with what the community thinks. And if you donate money, it has to be to a cause that most people agree with. Otherwise, you're going to face backlash. And Aaron Rodgers came out today and said something. And I thought that it was the ultimate cop-out. He says, Aaron Rodgers says NFL players fear repercussions for speaking out. And I'm going to tell you why I think that's true to a certain extent and why I think that's a lie at the same time.
Okay.
I think that could be true if you're the third-string left tackle. If you're the third-string left tackle and you are seen as a sort of troublemaker or rabble-rouser, or maybe you come off as this over-militant guy, then, yes, your career could be in jeopardy. Because you're the third-string left tackle. It's your contract year. Hey, this guy is, you know, he's getting the troops rallied. You know, he's sort of revving people up. You know, he's sort of radical. We might not want this in our locker room. You see what I'm saying? You know, we might want to move on from this. But a guy like Aaron Rodgers, you are a quarterback. You are arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. You can say whatever the hell it is that you want to say, and you are not going to face any type of repercussions from the Green Bay Packers. If you want to take a stand and you have something to get off your chest, believe me, Aaron Rodgers, you can get it off your chest. So to say that, I feel, was a real cop-out instead of just saying, I really don't have a comment. Or, you know, that's really not what we say. Or you can use the classic, I'm really not educated enough on that subject to give a, you know, a thorough response. Say that. But don't use the cop-out and say it's because the NFL doesn't want you to speak, especially a guy of your stature. You can say whatever it is you want. If Michael Bennett can say what he said and not face any type of repercussions, and we know what he said, you know, the NFL stands for 2 weeks ago. If he can say that and not face any type of repercussions, believe me, Aaron Rodgers, you can say whatever it is that you want to say. And I just thought that was a real weak move on Aaron Rodgers' part.
Well, I'll say this. You know, I am... We were having a conversation today, actually. It wasn't about Aaron Rodgers, which is really kind of odd. We weren't having a conversation about Aaron Rodgers, but we were talking about Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, one of the dudes thought Cam Newton was like 22.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, Cam Newton's only 22, so, you know, you can't expect him to be, you know, a voice of the people. And we were like, well, first, Cam Newton is older than 22, but more importantly, if you think back over the years, and I said, admittedly, you have to go back 60s, 70s. The top athletes spoke out on issues. Now, I don't want to say that it's necessarily fair or unfair, but I'll say this. I don't expect an athlete to be the voice of reason for a people. They're playing a sport. Just because you're the best quarterback in the league, it doesn't make you it doesn't make you any brighter than the next guy. It doesn't mean you're any more in tune with society's ails. It doesn't mean that you're better set up to speak for a group of people. So I don't think it's fair when people expect that because a guy's an athlete that he have a voice. I don't even expect, Paris, and you and I have had this conversation as well as some others, I don't even expect for them to give their money.
or their time.
Right.
Now, would it be nice? Of course. Of course it would be nice.
Right.
It would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
but I think that it starts, you know, at a young age. You can't expect a guy that's had nothing his whole life to get money and then decide to start giving it away. It's easy for us to sit back, you know, like I said to the one dude that was criticizing athletes. I said, well, when was the last time you went to a homeless shelter and fed some people? When was the last time you gave $20 to a homeless shelter? Was it the same thing? No, it's the same thing because we're talking about $20. So if you can't give $20 and a little bit of time in your local community, how do you have the gall to sit here and critique a man that you don't know if he does anything? Just because it's not in the paper, just because it's not on Facebook, just because it's not on Twitter, it doesn't mean he's not doing it. It just means nobody's talking about it. So how do you fix your mouth to critique a guy when you aren't doing what you're criticizing somebody of not doing? And I think that's kind of where we are. It's a crab in a bucket mentality. You look at Gabby Douglas. I'm gonna shift it over a little bit. You look at Gabby Douglas. Gabby Douglas is going out and winning gold medals representing her country, and she's representing her people. And instead of being excited for her and talking about how great she's done in her class, and I'm gonna call women out because it's predominantly black women. They're sitting here talking about her hair. You're sitting at home on a couch eating your Kraft cheese and macaroni dinner, and you go critique this young lady because her ends aren't right? Man, please. We got to stop. The crabs in a bucket mentality that we have has got to go, Paris. We need to do better as a people. At the same token, when I say we need to do better as people, I mean all of us. And it would be nice if the athletes got involved because regardless of what Charles Barkley tells you in a commercial, they are role models. They're role models by proxy. And it would be nice if they gave a little something. I don't expect them to. And I don't think that they should be forced to or criticized for not doing, but I'd like to see them do more. That's pretty much my take on the whole situation. And you're right. White athletes don't have the same pressure. They don't have the same pressure that black athletes have. I can't think of the last time I heard the white community say anything about any white player not giving back to where he came from. Not once.
And that's
off the top of my head. I may be wrong, but
yes, that's a whole other subject that we might have to dedicate a other sub show to, because I know we've started to touch on that a little bit, and you know I've always wondered about that. But just to stay on topic, only thing I disagree with you about is with Charles Barkley not being a role model. I've always felt that if an athlete is truly a role model, now it's a difference in I looked up to this athlete growing up. You know, this was my guy.
Right.
I love the way he played. Man, when I grow up, I want to play just like this. That's different than this is my guy, you know. I sort of patterned myself after him. And I think that we have gotten to the point to whereas, but we talked about it as far as the, you know, as far as the hip hop and the music, to where I've always felt that things like that are entertainment. And if those type of things have that much of an influence, then something isn't right in that household. That's
well, let me say this before
my take on that.
I want to make sure I'm clear on what I'm saying. Personally, I believe your role model, if you're a young man, should be someone in your household or some kind of male figure in your life. You know, I didn't have to worry about Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was my favorite basketball player. Walter Payton was my favorite overall athlete. My role model was my father. I wasn't living my life according to what Michael Jordan said or according to what Walter Payton said. So I'm not saying that they are quote-unquote. When I say they're role models, I just mean there are kids that look up to them in that way. There's a lot of youth in the inner city that don't have fathers in the home. And these are the cats that they watch on a regular basis. So I just want to make sure we're clear. I'm in no way, shape, or form saying that they should be role models, but to some, they follow what these guys do, and they buy the shoes that they wear because they say buy it. They say eat this, they go eat that. They say buy this car, that's the car they want. And that's kind of what I was alluding to. I want to make sure I was clear on that. But
so, brother, you think people buying Kias because of Shaq?
Dude, I'm still kind of confused on that. every time I see that commercial, I'm like LeBron James had the commercial where saying, I bet he doesn't drive that car. Where is the Shaq commercial where people are going, you are really driving that car, bro?
Wait,
but no, I don't think one person has bought a Kia.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Shaq is
Buick. Shaq is Buick. LeBron is Kia. Yeah, nobody is buying Shaq. I have never seen Shaq. I think I saw Shaq in one of those police cars, but they had the front seat put in the back seat or something like that. That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. But I think that's a good lead into next week's show, Paris. We'll talk a little Olympic basketball. We'll do, you know, this week we kind of talked about running backs. Next week we can get into the quarterback situation, and then we can also get back into this conversation about the community expectations upon our athletes, and does the white community have the same or similar or any expectations from their athletes? I think that's a good way to look at next week's show, and we can promote that and get that going early, and we see how that turns out.
Fair enough.
All right, cool. Well, again, I see Darvis listening in. Darvis, appreciate you, brother. 808 area code, we see you as well. Thank you for listening. Again, next week, people, call us back same time, same number, 347-637-3859, right back here. We'll see everybody next week. Want to appreciate everybody for listening. Again, same time next week. Peace out.
Peace. PJ, why do you keep going on?
Yo, it's a Saturday, I'm home, 6:30 chilling, surfing the internet to see what I'm feeling, laying on Blog Talk, see what they dealing, came across the barbershop, stepped into the building, real life sports talk, real entertainment, Mike Knox really keep his ear into the pavement, finger on the pulse of the industry, save it, you don't like the way brag, you ain't gotta say shh. Listen anyway, every Thursday, him and Corey G, tell him what you tripping on any day, barbershop mixed with talk show, there we go, give you the best damn show on the radio, $1 million audience meets with your favorite host, $1 million connections, feel the force, most electric, most eclectic, listen to the shows where the pros expected, 2 shows a week with an A-class guest list, the best damn show on the radio, check this,
the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show on the radio. Yo, it's the best damn show in radio.